The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Dr. Ray, cognitive defibrillator for a cerebral cortex out of life rhythm. Good to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday version, E-Person Monday. It's an allusion to the fact that the emails come from people, but it is also my striving to be sensitive to the language police that now dominate our culture and simply dictate, and I have no idea how they got this kind of power, to simply dictate what words you're allowed to use when, where, and in what context. Absolutely absurd. I don't know. I don't know how it happens. This is a fascinating study for sociologists. How do certain cultural ideals, style, rapidly take over? Quickly become ways of speaking, or become ways that you're not supposed to speak, or become things you're not supposed to think. And it just happens so fast. Even though the majority might not agree with it, the majority might think it's a foolish way to conduct yourself or to speak, somehow they are bullied and intimidated. Look at me, I'm using e-person instead of email because I don't want to be patriarchal. We will get to those in a moment. Marriage has always been a socializing institution. That's common sense, human history, and, for what it's worth, research. Marriage is, by and large, really good for people. It's good for kids, particularly good for men. Domesticates us, socializes. Well, is marriage related to economics? Is it related to things like crime? Two guys, Maxim Massenkoff and Evan Rose, both doctoral candidates in economics at the University of California, Berkeley, said this. They put out a paper. Family formation and crime. They examined the connection between pregnancy, childbirth and marriage, and crime. Here's what they said. Our event study analysis, now that's PhD study talk. In other words, what they surveyed, indicates that pregnancy triggers sharp declines in crime, rivaling any known intervention. Okay. For moms, criminal offending drops precipitously in the first few months of pregnancy. So if you got a woman who has had a history of breaking the law, scoffing the law, whatever. If she is pregnant, her level of continuing to offend drops heavily, stabilizing at half of her pre-pregnancy levels 3 years after the child's born. So in other words, it stays down. Men show a smaller but still 25% decline beginning with the onset of pregnancy. So this is what they said. Marriage
is a stopping point, marking the completion of a roughly 50% decline in offending, meaning crime activity, for both men and women. The author said that their study is, quote, by far the largest such study ever conducted in the United States. They looked at, this is big, this is heavy numbers, information on over 1 million births using data in the state of Washington, and they matched records on, quote, criminal offenses, births, marriages, and divorces. Woo-hoo! Now, is this correlation or is this causation? What is it about birth and marriage now, birth and marriage, that contributes significantly to reducing crime? There's a fella named Alex Tubberock. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. He has a very popular blog. He talks about this, and he says he thinks it's about, quote, socializing and civilizing both men and women. So, it follows. We should be concerned about the decline in American sense of importance of being married and having children. The millennials, roughly those between 18 and 34, 35, are now living together at rates higher than are married. And more children in that age group are born out of wedlock than in wedlock. Is it related to crime statistics? Certainly seems to be. Pew Research found this. 57% of men, 46% of women said, quote, having a job or career that they enjoy is essential for a fulfilling life. Then they asked them, what about marriage? Is that essential for a fulfilling life? 16% of men, 17% of women said marriage is essential for a fulfilling life. Moving on to kids, 16% of men, 22% of women said children are essential for a fulfilling life. So what you have essentially is, staying with the word essential, three times the importance for Americans of a career or job than marriage and kids. Well, okay. Follow that out. What effect does that have on crime? What effect does that have on offenses? We already know that it's just a boatload of research that says poverty is heavily, heavily related to single mothers. Heavily. If you want to not be poor, do three things. Finish high school, have kids in wedlock, and stay married. There it is. The three most important factors in avoiding poverty. An interesting study, and it's all just so related. And when God says, I designed marriage as the basic unit of society. I designed marriage to actually be a source of people getting closer to me, people doing what is good and right. That's what I designed it for. And the culture says, nah, we don't need it. It's not that important. I can function on my own with my kid. Not a problem. Matter of fact, I can have kids from different parents. That's just my choice. It's what I want. If God set up the moral laws that work the way they do, it's kind of like challenging gravity. I can jump out of a plane at 20,000 feet. So far, so good. 10,000 feet. So far, so good. See, it's no problem. I don't have to obey the law of gravity. It's not a problem. Look at me. I'm still doing fine. Up to a point. Okay. Take a break from that opening monologue. And when we come back, I'm going to hit your e-persons.
Hey, Dr. Ray. Hey, Dr. Ray. Hey, Dr. Ray. The doctor is in. Hey, Dr. Ray.
What will happen when Jesus Christ comes to judge the living and the dead? On the last day, the Catholic Catechism tells us everything will be laid bare, the deeds, thoughts, and works of all men and women. Then will culpable unbelief be condemned. Culpable unbelief discounts the offer of God's grace as nothing. Our attitude toward our neighbor will reveal our acceptance or rejection of God's grace and divine love. Our Lord will say, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me." Though Christ is given authority over all judgment, a right he acquired by way of the cross as Redeemer of the world, Jesus did not come to judge but to save and to give the life he has within himself. If we reject the grace we receive in this life, we already judge ourselves according to our works. We can even condemn ourselves for all eternity by rejecting the Spirit of love. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Christ is the wisdom of God, and so we try to develop the mind of Christ, whether we're looking at the bioethics of gene editing, immigration in the United States, abortion at the Supreme Court, or movies in Hollywood. So join me as we look at the news of the world through the lens of Scripture and the teaching of the Catholic Church.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta, this afternoon, 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
I worked in pro baseball for a long time, and we play on Sundays. And it was an easy excuse. I took the easy out and just didn't go to Mass. Got caught up in that whole selfishness, that whole, I can do it all. The times when I was struggling were the times I needed God the most. And now that I've come back and accepted God, my world has completely changed.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Good to have you with me here on the Dr. Is In Monday version, E-Person Monday, where I attempt at one point to dive into the stack of emails, but there is no stack anymore. I have left the stack behind. If I dive into the phone, I'll probably break it, but that's where they all are. They're on the phone. Every once in a while, I'll print them out because I just like the tactile experience of holding this. I used to love having the stack in front of me. Something about looking at this bunch that you could go through as opposed to on the phone where you can just see one at a time. This is from Sherry. I'm writing to you to ask your opinion on something. I gave my 19-year-old daughter a smartphone with parental controls on it. She didn't like the controls, so she bought another one for herself. A track phone that she has to buy minutes for. Now, I'm a little ignorant on this. Andrew, maybe you could help me out. Can you get the internet on track phones? I didn't think so. A track phone is one of those things you buy minutes for. You go get buy 30 minutes a month. I don't know that either. I didn't think that's the case. So Sherry's question was, do I let her have free access to the internet on it? So apparently you can, because she's 19. Or can I set limits even though she now pays for it? Interestingly enough, she says, P.S. My other teens think I should let her do what she wants since she's 19. Well, it doesn't matter what the other kids think, because I'll tell you, they are looking at this 19-year-old age thinking, well, when I get there, I'll get to do what I want. But I'm also living at home. Age entitlement is what I call it. I'm 18. I can do what I want. I'm 16. I can drive. Kids operate out of age entitlement. But the reality is, Sherry, she lives in your house. if you don't want access to that, even at her age, you have every right to do that. Will you be in a 1% minority? Yes, you will. I will tell you that now. I almost know of no parent who will put parental controls on a 19-year-old's smartphone. That doesn't make you wrong. You're the parent. You set up how you want to operate your household, keeping in mind also that you will have set a precedent. The precedent being that your younger kids are going to think, well, hey, I can live here too. I can take all the advantages of home and make my own rules regarding curfew and phone and chores. I think you have every right as the parent to say, no, you can have this, but there's going to be controls on it. Why wouldn't you? If she wasn't living with you, that'd be different, but she's living with you. And you can say, you know, I don't even want that access to that stuff in my house. Sure. Will she look at you like you are an absolute Neanderthal throwback? Yes, she will. And we are now living in a culture that says anyone who goes against the prevailing winds, and they are heavy, heavy headwinds of that culture, is automatically wrong. Automatically. Have no acknowledgement that the parents can raise and set the rules for their children as they see fit, according to their moral stances. No, there's no acknowledgement for that. The culture says your 19-year-old kid should have whatever access to wherever she wants on that phone. That's the way it is. And if you don't yield to that, not only are you culturally out of touch, but much worse, you are unfair, irrational to your children. So, Sherry, those are my thoughts on that. Let's see what else we've got. I'm a good parent. Okay, no, I gotta get, that's not that one. Let me look at that one here. Gone into the phone stack. Okay. They sent to me by an attorney named John. Ohio State study, family size, and the likelihood of divorce. It's safe to say that the more kids in a family, the less likely of divorce. And there's a lot of reasons for that. The kids may not be the direct cause. The direct cause may be more religious sensibility, more welcoming of children, more welcoming of family life, practicalities. Divorce is less likely if someone has to pay child support for five kids as opposed to one. Alrighty. John says, I am a consumer bankruptcy attorney for a legal aid organization. I focused my studies in the social sciences, especially economics, sociology, psychology, history. I absolutely agree. Now, this is probably why I took this e-person right away quick. Absolutely agree with your assessment that the study was defective for not taking religion into account. That's right. Here's what the study was. Essentially said that you have larger families. The kids are more likely to not be divorced as they grow up, and the parents are less likely. And I said there's not a mention at all about religion. The authors of the study said, well, it's because they learn communication skills, because they learn give and take. It's because they learn to share. They learn the stuff that is good and helpful for social interchange. And because of that, they are more equipped for the give and take of marriage if and when it happens. And I said, yeah, those are all good things, but that's not the core. The core is most likely that those families tend to be more religious. And they teach the value of marriage, they teach the value of family, they teach the value of kids, much more so than the culture around them. Now, John says he agrees with me. He He is a consumer bankruptcy attorney. I absolutely agree with the assessment that the study was defective for not taking religion into account and would explain the correlation between larger number of children and decreased likelihood of divorce, as well as or better than all others. I think better than all others. I think that is the core explanation for why divorce is less among not only the marriages with large children, but the children who then grow up. With respect to single-child households, now these are his thoughts. My thoughts, based on anecdotal evidence, life experiences, is that such children tend to be more self-centered, less flexible with respect to healthy compromise, and generally less able to get along well with others on a day-in, day-out basis over time. I say this, he says, in the face of a recent German study that concludes that only children are not more narcissistic than their multi-sibling counterparts. Let me respond to that. One would expect that a single child would have more of a lot of things than families with 3, 4, 5, 6 kids. The child would probably have more materially. The child would probably have more in the way of options, activities, things that they can experience growing up, more focal point of attention. So one might extrapolate and say, well, therefore, they could be more likely to think they're the center of the universe. That's complicated by the fact that children all have different temperaments. I know some single children that are the absolute most delightful human beings you'd ever want to see. And they're not self-centered remotely. Temperament is a big factor. A lot of parents didn't choose to have one child. That's just what happened. They would have loved to have had more, but they couldn't. Okay, that's a factor. If a kid is a single child, then there is research that indicates that the parents, as a group, tend to be better educated. They are more career-oriented, so they've decided to limit their family size to one child. All right. In fact, would that child have more benefits in terms of education, in terms of intellect, in terms of intelligence, emotional stimulation, those kinds of things? Would that happen? So all these things are swirling about in a very mixed picture. So I'm not sure where I fall on that whole question of single kids being a little more self-focused. I'll see what we got. Oh, I got to take the break here quickly. So it says, neuroscience news, only children, not narcissists. Yeah, well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that only children as a group are more narcissistic. Narcissists are, that's a pretty extreme term. And I know it's flung about very easily. He's a narcissist. To kind of mean self-centered. But a narcissist, clinically speaking, is way down the continuum from just self-centered or self-absorbed. A narcissist is someone that struggles with any kind of relationship. They are so self-focused that it interferes with their ability to relate to people, with their ability to live life well, with their ability to show empathy, with their ability to see another person's point of view. I mean, this is, you call somebody a narcissist, you're dealing with some pretty extreme stuff. Unfortunately, that word's getting flung about now, bandied about now in a very informal sense.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at avemariaradio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to avemariaradio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
Is the ecclesial ministry of the Catholic Church personal as well as sacramental and collegial in character? The Catechism says yes. Jesus Christ, the founder of the Catholic Church, calls his ministers personally when he says, "Follow me." The College of Bishops are related to the Pontiff in Rome as Peter was related to the rest of the apostles. When Christ instituted the 12 apostles, he constituted them in a college or permanent assembly at the head of which he placed Peter, the rock of his church. Our Lord gave Peter the keys to his church, designating him the shepherd of the whole flock. The power Christ gave Peter to loose and to bind was also given to the College of the Apostles, united to its head. This pastoral office of Peter and the other apostles belongs to the church's very foundation and is continued by the bishops under the primacy of the Pope. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Call to Communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
An elderly gentleman had serious hearing problems for a number of years. He went to the doctor. The doctor was able to have him fitted for a set of hearing aids. It allowed him to hear 100% well. Elderly gentleman went back in a month to the doctor, and the doctor said, your hearing is perfect. Your family must be really pleased that you can hear again. He replied, no, I haven't told my family that I have a hearing aid yet. I just sit around and listen to their conversations. I've changed my will 3 times. Very twicky. Dr. Ray here. Thank you for joining me. Doctors in E-Person Monday, where we take on, address, do what we can with the plethora of emails that come in. This is from Carol. Carol is a licensed clinical professional counselor. Hi, Dr. Ray. Yes, she says, I am a female, as you know from my opening. Let's see. Here is something that happened as I listened to a podcast of your show. As you discussed OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, I thought myself clever to think of taking pictures with the cell phone of the door locked, the oven off, whatever the gets the person anxious. And we were talking about this. A lot of times folks with an OCD, anxiety-producing compulsion, will say, well, I got to check the door 17 times. I got to make sure the oven is off. I've got to. It's never enough, because once I check it, as soon as I climb the stairs, I get this nagging, anxious feeling that it's not locked again, so I go back down. And she said, of course, I thought myself clever to think of taking pics with the cell phone of the doors locked. Well, seconds later, you brought the idea up. Guess we are both clever. She's a therapist in Maryland and Virginia. Carol, thank you. That is sweet. I'm glad I did think of it, though, because then you would have said, you know, Dr. Ray, you didn't think of this. Telekinesis. This is from Therese. Now, my speculation on this one, this is a grandmother, but she's trying to keep it rather anonymous.
I have a question regarding a family with a 4-year-old boy, their only child. Now, this is interesting. She knows an awful lot about the dynamics of the situation. So my guess would be this is either her adult son or daughter, she's grandma, or someone that she knows somehow in some familial way. Their only child. The child loves and adores his father. So far, so good. Does not care for his mother. No cuddling or hugging, even though she's a good, loving, responsible mother. He plays a lot of physical activities with the father, and the mother joins in when time permits. The child tells the mother that he doesn't like her. Even when putting the child to bed, he would, at times, ask mother to leave and request the father to do this. Now, I've seen this dynamic. I have seen it. And it's not unusual in the sense that the kids go through these phases. I prefer this parent, I prefer that parent. And a 4-year-old boy is going to identify with dad. However, the parents usually bridle it. They put limits on it. For example, we didn't allow any of our children to tell either of us, my wife or myself, they didn't like us. We just didn't allow it. That was rude. All right? We're not going to tell them, I don't like you. That's a form of disrespect. It really is. Now, the experts all say, no, that's just the child expressing feelings. Yeah, well, those are nasty feelings to express. So this apparently is being allowed. Whenever the child hurts the mother's feelings, the father will tell the child to use good words. That's it. No discipline. Father never allows child to play by himself. Child needs constant attention. The father and the son are constantly playing, a lot of physical activities, etc., etc., etc. Mother is very unhappy and sad. Well, she feels excluded. And I don't know why dad's doing this. I don't know why dad would form this kind of alliance with the child to the exclusion of his spouse. This would be the kind of thing that would come into my office under the rubric of marriage counseling. Because mom would get progressively unhappy. She feels like she's being isolated away from her son's affection and attention. And dad is reveling in it. For whatever the reason, dad is somehow forming an alliance with this kid over and above his wife. Where's that coming from? See, that would be my question. I would chase it. I'd say, what's happening here? What is the dynamic in the marriage? Is this an unsatisfactory, unhappy marriage? And therefore, the dad's putting all his emotional energy into the child, and he's winning the victory here? Or no, is this just a well-intentioned dad who doesn't realize what's happening? And has mom really explained to him how much this makes her feel left out? The mother is unhappy. The father and the child do not care. Well, how does Therese know this? Has she seen it? Has mother confided in her? How does she know all this? The child does not like to give hugs to others very much either. He's always in hugging. He's hugging and hugging his dad. Here's her crux of her question. How can this mother get the child to love her, want to spend time with her? Well, I would imagine that mom's got to be a little more assertive in making this happen with the child. And it'll happen more easily if dad's not around. If there are times when she is alone with the child and she can do this and not permit the child to be rude and disrespectful. A 4-year-old will get on a roll. And when they find a certain pattern of behavior that works, they run with it. So now this little 4-year-old, the dynamic is, I like daddy, I don't like mommy. That's how he operates. Mom's got to break into that pattern. And perhaps if dad lets mom take the little guy on errands or activities together. Initially, this little boy will be resistant, but that's okay. He'll find out in time that his mommy is a loving parent too. His mommy deserves his affection too. If this goes on for a long time, one has to ask the question, what other dynamics are underneath it all? What is fueling this? Is there something between the parents, between the spouses, that are underlying all of this? Is this just kind of an overdoing on dad's part? Remains to be seen.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
In the church, we speak of seven gifts: wisdom, understanding, counsel, knowledge, loyalty, courage, and reverence or fear of the Lord. When I speak about the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and these gifts come, they give you the ability to go beyond your strength. If you're struggling to be a good person, a good member of your religion, you know it's a struggle and you don't always make it. I've been at it many, many decades and I still struggle and trip and fall and have holes in my socks. Struggling to be a good person, something that we need help at. And this help comes to us by these gifts of the Holy Spirit.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
What is criticism exactly? If you pay close attention, do you notice what most criticism is? Oh, it's not because you're doing something wrong or hurtful, something that needs corrected. Most criticism is, you're not doing it the way I would do it. Or you're not doing it the way I want you to do it. That's what most criticism is. And you have to get good at sorting that out. Otherwise, you're going to get real upset when anyone says anything about what you are doing. Now, of course, you could turn this on yourself. Do you do that? Is most of your criticism a message to someone else that says, you're not doing it the way I would do it? Well, save your criticism for things that are really wrong.
The doctor will see you now.
Good to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. Once again, E-Person Monday. Had to do something to deal with the E-Persons that come in, because they come in by the boatload. More E-Persons come in than phone calls, believe it or not. I suspect it has something to do with the anonymity of the whole thing. I suspect it has something to do with people saying, well, if I call in, what if I don't get on right away quick? You know, I could have to sit and listen to this guy for 43 minutes before I get on. I'm not sure I could take that. It's not worth it to get a suggestion for the situation. This is from Sandra. Dear Dr. Ray, do surveys or other sources indicate that mental illness is on the rise among our youth? Yes. But again, Sandra, I got to qualify this. Mental illness, as it was once used, formerly used, it's a very pretty serious indication of problems. Now, as it is used, it pretty much means anything that is diagnosable. So if you say antisocial personality, if you say dependent personality, if you say borderline personality, if you broaden out what is now under the umbrella of mental illness, if you do that, yes, surveys indicate that a very significant percentage of our youth are distressed, unhappy, struggling, involved with drugs, rampant impulse control problems. All right. She goes on. I recently had lunch with two friends. One of the friends, like myself, is a retired professor. The other friend is a dean at the university where the two of us who were retired had taught. All three of us were or are involved in teacher education. My retired friend shared that she reads books to kindergarten and first grade children at a local elementary school library. She described a five-year-old who yells, never talks in a normal tone of voice. While she reads, she has to talk louder to speak over the continuing yelling of this boy. The dean said that the university is starting a new required course because more and more children are identified with mental illness. Once again, Sandra, that is how you define it. If you define it as significant struggles with life, with emotions, yes, there's. I saw a recent survey that said upwards of 25% of the youth going to college had a quote-unquote diagnosable mental illness. Now, once again, much of what we call mental illness is a label capturing certain types of problems in living. My question is whether the problem is mental illness or parental behavior. I was referring to parent interactions and discipline of children. While my friends acknowledge that parental behavior might be involved, the course that we'll be offering will focus on mental illness. Well, once again, what kind of mental illness? What diagnoses? Are we talking significant psychotic disorders? Because the course isn't going to help you. If we're talking about the much broader range of personality disorders, conduct disorders, anxiety disorders, depression, I don't know how much it will help because these are all complex. They're multifaceted, and there isn't some teaching formula that says here's how you teach a child who's depressed. Okay. Also, I don't know enough about the content of the proposed course. I don't know where the classroom teacher is or where the school librarian is when my friend reads a book aloud to the children. Yes, and I think that in normal times in our culture, the five-year-old would have been told he needs to be quiet or he will be removed. That's the way it once was. I have no trouble believing that whoever is in charge of this reading program at this local library would not do that, because somehow, some way, they would view the child as having some kind of disorder that has to be tolerated, which is sad because this is not helping the child at all. And all it will do is ostracize him because the other kids will look at him like, get him out of here. I also don't know how much authority my friend has when she is at the school library for short periods. If mental illness is on the rise among our youth, how do we know and what are we describing? Has anyone analyzed whether or not this is true? Yeah, Sandra, they have. They really have. But again, to repeat, it all comes down to how do you define mental illness? My experience as a clinician, and I think I got research to back me up on this, is that with the deterioration of the family, which is the main socializing, moralizing unit of children, and with the fact that many good parents have swallowed a lot of so-called enlightened parenting notions that are only leading them to not enjoy their children, to have their children be much more misbehaved than they need to be, that it is understandable that these young adults are either discontent, distressed, unhappy. Throw in the absolute overwhelming socializing influence of technology, social media, computers, sewage media, music, entertainment, jumping in and overwhelming some of the best parents' efforts to give these kids traditional stability in life, it is absolutely no surprise whatsoever to me that we are reaping what we are sowing.
What is frightening to me about this, among many other things, but one of the things that is frightening, is that we're not looking at the 800-pound gorilla that's sitting in the living room. Instead, we're saying, these children are disturbed. Mental illness is on the rise. Internal-type disorders are overwhelming our young adults. That's what we're saying. We're pointing at the kids and going, you got a problem. We've got to focus much more on the etiology of the problem, which is broken families, lack of traditional moral guidelines, lack of dads in the home, overwhelmingly sewage, entertainment and media, and social media. All of this stuff is just swirling around to socialize and moralize our children in a very bad way. And it makes perfect sense to see that more and more of them are committing suicide, are discontent with life, have complaints about depression, anxiety, drug use, all of this. It's not a surprise. We're reaping what we have been sowing for quite some time. I'm Dr. Ray.
What's the deal with Dr. Ray? I mean, is he a psychologist or a comedian?
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria mutual funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria mutual funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The EWTN home video highlight for January is Litanies with the Franciscan Missionaries of the Eternal Word. Now you can pray these seven powerful litanies from the Shrine of the Most Blessed Sacrament any time of the day or night. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is Facts for Christianity. There is something to be said for rejecting the political correctness demanded by social warriors and embracing instead the suffering of reality. Yes, life is full of conflict, pain, and suffering. No life has ever been different. But we have a choice. Either we descend into hopelessness, or we choose to find meaning in the rough fabric of reality. And what meaning is there? Peter wrote, "Those who suffer in the body are done with sin." Those who suffer in the body are done with sin. Will sin lead us into suffering, or will suffering lead us out of sin? Remain thankful for the strong example of Christ and the saints whose suffering faith was rooted in the facts of reality. And that's a fact for Christianity. To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
Good to have you with me here. Dr. Ray Guarendi program. The Doctor is in Monday through Friday. Co-production, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and the Ave Maria Radio Communications. My producer man, Andrew Kruchek, over there in Ann Arbor. I am here in Canton, Ohio, home of Mother Angelica and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Also, I grew up about, a quarter of a mile from the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I think I've been there one time. That was when Jimmy Brown was inducted. What else? TV show, Living Right with Dr. Ray, is to be entering its ninth season coming up. All new shows after the first of the year sometime. On the EWTN Global Catholic Television Network, airs on Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, and is re-aired on Tuesdays, 9 a.m. Eastern, and Fridays, 5 a.m. Eastern, which someone might say, well, you know, Dr. Ray, there's people getting up at 5 a.m., and they might want to put on EWTN. Yeah, but that's Eastern time. Mountain time, it's 3 a.m., and Pacific time, it's 2 a.m., I don't know. That's pretty typical of putting somebody when you're 9 years old in right field to try to hide them.
I'll talk to EWTN about that. My website, drray.com. What else? That's pretty much it. Facebook page. I have a dear lady who handles a Facebook page, does a wonderful job of it. This is from Ann. My father's dying words were, family is everything. All right, stop right there. We really have a strong obligation. And I've had many people tell me, oh my, the last words, or my mother made me promise this. I had one lady call me and say, my mother made me promise that I would take care of my handicapped sister. And then the sister got to be 60-some years old and became violent and nasty and hard to manage. And so this dear woman was at a stress point in her life because she couldn't manage this now 60-some year old who was 20 or 30 when she took care of her initially. It's been 8 years since my father passed away, and I'm struggling with how to understand these words. Well, I would be too. It's a very generic statement. Family is everything. What does that mean? I'm a wife, mother of four little ones. I believe my family is my number one priority. My adult siblings are unhappy that our lives are not more intertwined, holding the family is everything over my head. Well, I don't know what they want. Are they intrusive? Are they saying that you're just busy and you're neglecting us? I don't know what the underlying dynamics are in all of this, Ann. If indeed you are trying to raise four little ones, you're pulled in a lot of different directions, and you don't have the kind of time that they would want you to have because maybe they have less children, or maybe they're not married, or maybe they're married with no children, then they don't particularly understand the busyness of your life. And if that's the case, then they just might be making you feel guilty needlessly. Here's, I think, the significant sentence. I would love to be involved. However, they do not respect my husband and my decisions. Now, I'm reading between the lines here. Anne and her husband have four little ones, which means they welcome life, most likely, which means they are probably pretty faithful Catholics, which means they may be a bit different in the way they approach family life, in the way they approach religion, in the way they approach morality, in the way that they vote, and everything, than some of their siblings. She goes on. For example, my family was unhappy with our choice of godparents for our fourth child, and a huge fallout happened over this. Now, see, that tells me intrusive. That screams intrusive to me. Because a family, if they were open about this, would simply say that Anne and her husband have a right to choose whoever they choose, whomever they choose, for godparents. That is their decision. But yet the family got mad. And a fallout. In other words, you're not doing what we want. That's really what it is. I love my father. And I feel like his words are being twisted. Well, if they are, what they're saying is, family is everything, which means you need to act as a family like we think you should act. If that's what's happening. I am asked to share every decision my husband and I make, and then we are questioned on all of it. Well, then don't share it, Ann. It doesn't matter. Again, a few sentences ago, I said I'm screaming here intrusive. That's what I'm hearing in between the lines. My husband is adamant that I am being abused by them. Maybe a strong word. However, there are times I feel I'm being strong-armed by him. I'm a people pleaser. I'm so confused. I'm trying my best to follow Catholic teaching. Well, it isn't Catholic teaching that says you have to do whatever somebody else wants you to do when you're not doing anything morally wrong and you're allowed to act and raise your kids and live your life as you see fit and best in your value system. You do not have to acquiesce to someone who says you need to do it this way. This is the right way to do it. If in fact, this is not a moral thing. I would suspect your husband's probably getting pretty frustrated at two things. One, your family's interference with their opinions
and their ideas on how you should live your life, and two, how much it bothers you. I would suspect it's only going to get probably a little more intense if you have more kids, because you'll be busier, you won't have the time, and there will be more options that you choose that they don't. So, Ann, I think you really need to separate out when they're being unreasonable about all this and have the confidence to say, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm going to live and raise my children as I see best. I'm Dr. Ray. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Walk with God. Hold your kids, your kiddies, tightly by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.